we have offered organization at our apartments and included not only the Dolphin apartments, but anyone who lives in the flats that's going to be affected. And being affected means the fact that they're going to be bulldozing, or the fact that their children's best friend's going to be displaced. You know, the school bus is going to have a different set of kids in it.
you'll be able to try to find a job, you know, if a place in Watsonville to go to your job in Santa Cruz.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, we're all going to be affected by it down there. And
I hope the candidates...
So our meetings are open to anyone who is concerned, number one, or lives down there, and they don't have to have a rental agreement with me.
Right, and that's of course, this will be happening tomorrow at 6:30 at the Lee Trailer at 124 Lee Brandt Street. We're talking to Julie Costanza. At the Lee Garage, I'm sorry, it's the
and
community trailer.
And it may end
trailer.
Up in the parking lot. What I'm offering
yes.
is, because it's not my position to step onto the Dolphin place and say, hey, you guys, you got to do this or you got to do that. But I will tell them, if you guys need a place, a safe place to organize, you have it over there, even if we have to do it in the parking lot.
I believe
I'm going to be able to have the garage opened and available.
And there will be champagne and perhaps a little
sardines,
cordon bleu.
We're having sardines and crackers.
Now I know that you're in pretty close contact with Vernon Lee, the owner of the property.
I'm in constant contact. He's my dad.
And so you are an agent of the landlord.
Yeah, I am.
So you would know, has he committed himself to a rent freeze on the Lee property at least until the end of the year?
Yes, he has.
And you know, have any rents been raised?
No. I do know, and I know that they have not.
Okay. And has he committed himself to no evictions without just cause?
He has, and to the point we've had a couple of just causes and worked with the people, because we hate to see someone who's, like, misbehaving, like not paying their rent or paying late or whatever, lose out on future housing.
But you aren't giving people...
We've been patient.
You aren't kicking people out for having political signs in the windows.
No.
Mercy Charities Housing apparently has a policy. You have to have the right thing in the window.
That's none of our business.
And you don't have a policy, for example, if somebody said, I don't like Residentes Unidos, I want to be able to... I think the property should be sold to the city, and I'm going to circulate a petition of that effect. You're not going to kick the person out for doing that?
That's none of our business, and if somebody does have that feeling and that, you know, that belief, then that's okay. But you know what? I'm going to still, behind the scenes, protect them in any way that I can from what may happen to them, even if they're oblivious to what's really going on. That's okay with me.
Protect them from?
From possible eviction, like if Mercy Housing gets a hold of our spot and decides just to evict for no reason.
There's also the danger, of course, that if Vernon Lee, your father, and the property owner does not want to sell, that they may begin to institute eminent domain proceedings against the property.
And you know, the truth is, and I've had several people who have confirmed this, financially it would be to our advantage if they did do that. Tax-wise, and there's several reasons why that would be. And reinvesting times, and yeah, there's some advantages to that. You know, and I'm telling you, we've had some offers on the property in the last year, and we have a couple that we have, and this is not about, and I really don't want to hear that this got turned around, and we're, you know, we're going to kick everybody out, and if they don't do what we say, we'll sell to someone else or anything like that. But there are some interested local people, franchise-type businesses who... housing type businesses who would like our property. The furthest I've gone on that is I have their card in my wallet, and I happened to meet one of the individuals at one of the SIG meetings, and he saw what was happening and how.
Well, let me ask you something about that, because this is a matter of, you know, some concern to those of us. We don't want to see the city hand this property over to Mercy Charities and then have them kick everybody out or kick every second person out.
Because right now there's not really a project, right?
Right. Now, that's a good question. I thought not, but the fact that they can continue to think they can continue to talk about your property sale on the property makes me wonder if I was wrong.
They could just be some...
I'm not sure what they're doing.
People want to buy some property.
But my
there's no project, do they have to relocate people?
Yeah, well, now that's a good point. My question, though, is what about, you know, what about from your point of view, the owner. I mean, the owner, it's the owner's property. I mean, Vernon Lee and Terry McElroy for the Dolphin can do whatever they want with their property.
That's correct.
I mean, this is America. You know, you have a right to, you know, sell large amounts of property no matter how many people get hurt. That, unfortunately, is the way we live in this country. So, or fortunately, if you think it's a good idea. The question I have for you is, what kind of guarantees do tenants have that next year Vernon Lee or Terry McElroy won't sell this to somebody that's going to put up condos? Now, I've heard, you know, and ram a bunch of students into this property. Now, the arguments I've heard have been these, and they came from the Bears, who are a couple that live nearby.
Right.
And
I've heard of them.
Been there for 20 years, and they've been on the show, and we all know them very well, those of us who've been discussing this issue. They are that really it's not the most ideal living conditions down next to the beach boardwalk as far as a great condo goes, and so it's not going to be a profitable kind of investment for somebody to put in expensive housing down there. But I am not an expert in any of this stuff, and I'm wondering, imagine, Julie, that you're a tenant, and you look to the city and you say, here are these people at the city who are prepared to sell us out. And then you look over at the owners and you say, well, the owners have been good to us so far, but how can we be sure? What kind of, you know, what can I do to guarantee for my family that the people I've lived with here for 20 years are not going to be kicked out into a market that is horrible? Mm-hmm. What would you say to that person? Or what would you say if you were that person?
If I were that person, I think I'd be really confused. Because they've seen me in action, and they know my sincerity.
Mm-hmm. But you don't control the property. I mean, you're the manager, but I mean, it's not your property, right?
No, it's not. It's my inheritance, but it's not my property.
Right. So if we shoot your dad, maybe we can get you to make some guarantees.
Huh? Yeah, but you know what? He is pretty much. I'll tell you what he's about. You know what he likes to do? He likes to go and write and read cowboy poetry at these little functions all over Nevada and in California. He lives in California, but he likes to go do stuff like that. He's low-key. He's not a big real estate...
muggle.
No, he's none of that, you know, and he goes to the Senior Citizen Center from like 9 until 11:30 or 12 every day, and he's taking a creative writing class right now. And the probably most frisky thing he does is to stop at garage sales, and and he really likes to do that. His house has a lot of stuff he doesn't need, and then he starts trading it for other stuff.
Well, we agree he's a sweetie, but the question is, here is our nervous tenant with, she's got her family in the apartment, there's another family that's also living in the apartment. Mm-hmm. She knows if Mercy Charity's housing takes the apartments, it's probable they won't let all those people live in those rooms, so that some of them will have to go, and they won't build enough units because they said they won't. And the city council isn't going to make them do it, so some people are going to be displaced, and the relocation money they get will be inadequate. So they know the Mercy Charities thing they don't like, but then they hear, well, look what's happening next door. McElroy is considering selling his property to somebody around the corner who's raising the rents on other apartment buildings. What should I do? What do you say to that person?
Well, I can say that, you know, what I can guarantee in my apartments only is that... And this has been in effect for a few months now, is that, you know, we have frozen our rents, although we kind of felt funny doing it, because the rent increases in our place have been like maybe 2 in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wasn't an issue, but just because of all the insecurities, we wanted to make sure everyone knew that the rents would not be going up, even though we got like over a $2,000 water bill last month.
Wow.
City's making money. but anyways, I think they charge us about $150 a week to come pick up a container.
So there is a rent freeze, but how is this guaranteed? It's certainly, I mean, it's not been presented. I mean, we're asking the city for legal guarantees. Shouldn't the tenants also be asking the landlord for legal guarantees, too, if they want to be equally assured and if we want to be equally even-handed about this? And I realize that I put you kind of on the spot with this because you are, you know...
They've already got the guarantee from us. And
city says the same thing. Remember, they say we don't have to sign legal documents because it's in the law already. Would you be opposed if the tenants came with you as a group to sign a legal document that said we guarantee we'll freeze these rents except for, let's say, cost of living increases for, you know, whatever period you've agreed to freeze them for.
At this particular time, we have agreed for the remainder of the year 2000, mm-hmm. there would be no increase.
So you wouldn't mind signing a legal document to
no
that
problem.
Effect? Okay, well, I may call you on that, Julie. And
I have the authority to do that.
Huh. Well, I may ask the tenants to circulate a document, have a lawyer draw it up, and say, we guarantee a rent freeze and no evictions without just cause.
Without just cause.
Right. So we'll see the city council has repeatedly broken its promises on this, and I think it would be interesting if the landlords were shown to be better at this and better at their words.
Mm-hmm.
And I frankly... And I don't know, it's probably because you're so good-looking, but, my experience with you has been that you don't break your word, mm-hmm. and you have been keeping your promises, and I'm not aware the rents have risen. Again, I'm not sure because I haven't been examining your rents closely.
Our rents range from $550 to $750. That includes water, mm-hmm. garbage, and I believe it's electricity or gas. They pay one of them.
And this is not per person. This is per unit, right?
Per unit. So
and how many people are in the average unit?
There can be two to probably seven in ours.
Right. So this for some people, this is affordable housing, particularly where you have a lot of single men splitting a unit?
I think it's very affordable housing.
Right.
Like I said, these units are supplying homes to several people. And it's not to our advantage. It would be really hunky-dory if we had one or two people in each one, because our bills would go down about $1,000 a month on one end and maybe $500 or so on the other.
Mm-hmm.
That adds up in a year, you know.
Because more people use more electrical and water services.
Exactly. It's not to our advantage. It would be less maintenance. We do our own maintenance. Mm-hmm. They don't pay for any of the maintenance. And it would also be, you know, the blower guy that comes in and cleans and all that stuff, you know. Less cars there, less everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have off-street parking, which we provide. I don't believe the other places are providing those that are in question on this particular
mm-hmm.
project.
Well, the question is, are you going to be able to have housing after the city starts making its move on you? And I guess that's what we're going to be meeting on tomorrow night at 6:30 at 124 Lee Brand Street with the hopefully reinvigorated or at least re-meeting Residentes Unidos.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a number people can call if they want to leave a message for Residentes Unidos? So.
Well, right now the Residentes Unidos spokesperson does not have a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and because I have some medical stuff going on, and my rest is...
Maybe we should have people refer through the Huff line, huh?
That would really be okay.
Okay,
That would be really okay. I can't commit to all the phone calls.
I understand.
Right now, because I'm taking care of some, you know, medical stuff.
Okay. Well, those who are interested in more information, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We have been talking to Julie Costanza Gomez, who is the daughter of Vernon Lee, who owns the Lee Apartments, and the issue is suddenly reappearing with shocking, striking summer lightning suddenness on the agenda of the City Council at 11:30 on Tuesday morning, and we're going to try to get a jump on that to the Residentes Unidos meeting at 6:30 Monday night, 124 Lee Brandt Street. Anything you want to add, Julie?
The one thing I want to say is we are still extremely interested, and we would really like the city to be the owners of our property. But we really can't see doing something like that unless they do the stuff they promised back in June. And that is guarantee these people, for God's sake, they're going to get to move back. Come on. You know, or do that leapfrog thing. You know, it sounds like they're possibly the proud owners of those other properties now. And they could do leapfrog and keep everybody happy. And this doesn't have to be ugly. It could be really nice, and we'd really like to come into coming back from break on a good note.
Will you be interested in being a part of the forum if your health allows on October 28th? Community Television and SCAN is going to support a forum at Community Television running from 1 to 3 where members of Mercy Charities Housing, advocates and critics like myself, Phil Baer, other people, other housing, low-income housing providers, and the City Council candidates have been invited to come, and what will eventually be a three-hour-long program going out 2 hours of it live to the community. Would you be like to be a part of that?
My health issues should be Yeah, I have some stuff coming up. I have a surgery coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I should be up and able to drive by then.
Okay, if not, we'll have to carry you in a stretcher there.
And if not, we can conference call me or something. I was told I'd be up and moving by then.
Sounds good to me. I thank you for...
I should be rolling again around October, mid-October. I should be able to drive.
That'll be good. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk to you now.
Yeah.
Thanks again for talking to us, Julie.
You're quite welcome. Have a great Sunday.
Hey, you too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
So, the meetings continue. The kickoff rally for Bonnie Moore at the Duck Pond starts in 10 minutes. For Steve Argue, 2 hours and 10 minutes. And an incoming phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, what's happening?
Hey, it's the Mad Merlin. How are you doing there,
Merlin? Yeah, I couldn't believe it, man. That's the manager of the Lee Apartments.
Yeah, that's the one.
And she's saying they're going to put a freeze on the rents. Huh?
She said they have put a freeze on the rents. They promised to do that 2 months ago and challenged the city to agree to do the same, and the city instead cut them out of the process and now is sneaking in through closed negotiations through the back door again. And that's the old Dolphin Lee deal.
Man, when you got the landlords helping you out in the city against you, what's that?
It's very strange, isn't it?
That's kind of like somebody would consider backwards.
Now what's happening at your trailer park? I know you've been fighting for some decent treatment.
Apparently
there.
We were supposed to be getting at the Cabrillo Mobile Home Estates here, buying this trailer park, and I have no idea what happened to it as far as Gail Ortiz goes, running for city council in Capitola. She is running, and I haven't heard anything about her as far as us being able to purchase this mobile home park.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on?
Well, anything you want to...
up in the air, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. And, of course, we're waiting for updates. Any
no,
other...
No, we do have first rights on buying the mobile home park.
Uh-huh.
So if the landlord, the present owner of the mobile home park, wants to sell it to anyone else, he has to first offer it to the residents who own mobile homes here personally.
Okay. Did you have something in mind you wanted to talk about?
Well, I just wanted to applaud that woman for calling in and doing what she's doing, trying to help out the poor people. I was listening to her saying she's rents average from $500 to $750 a month.
That's not per person, that's per unit. Yeah.
Yeah, well... In Santa Cruz, that's, I guess, what you'd call that low.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I work with truck drivers from all over the country, and they think that's ridiculous, according to them.
Right.
And you go someplace else in the United States, and rents are really, really cheap. It's really cheap to buy a house anywhere else in the United States besides the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is true, however, that rents are beginning to outstrip in other areas. I was reading stories from Colorado, which is supposed to be cheap, but apparently it's not, and I've got a story here from Wyoming. Anything you want to add, because I'm about to rush into another
tape. I moved a person out of a house a few days ago in Santa Cruz on the west side, right by West Cliff, and they put their house on the market. It was like a two-bedroom, real nice house, real nice backyard, real old house, though. I don't know what they got for it, but the person that sold the house for them owns a title company, and they sold the house in 4 days because they told this person the prices of housing is going to drop, which would be a good thing, I think.
Well, I know that, is it Cypress... It's not Cypress Point, it's Cypress... God. The Cypress something housing had the big ruckus earlier this year. They were raising their rents and kicking out all the tenants, and Christopher Crone had made some muted comments about rent control, perhaps, and then supposedly the new management company backed away from that, but now I hear something similar is happening, but nobody's doing anything and responding about it.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Robert, what I do for a living is move people, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to mention the company I work for. There's no reason to do that.
Sure.
But 90% of the people that I move are moving out, and the reason they're doing this is because they're getting, you know, like $3, $4, $5 to $1 million for their house, and they're going somebody's house and buying a better house, like sometimes twice as good, for $80,000. And they get all this money to bank.
Hey, well, you should cut me in on this somehow, you know. Radio needs the bucks, at least my show does.
Well, if I had some bucks to share, it would probably be for your show.
Hey, thank you.
Not some of these other shows I call in and I can't even get on the fucking air.
Well, as you hear, I'm trying to nuzzle you off the air since we only have...
I know.
We have 35 minutes left. Is there more you want to say?
No.
Well, listen, thank you, and I appreciate the update. I think hearing the reality of what's going on from a person who's actually moving people back and forth.
Well, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
All the people that I move out, Robert, that are renting,
mm-hmm.
their average price of rent, or the average rent, is going anywhere from $900 to $1,000 up for the next person that moves in.
Wow.
And I'm serious. I'm not lying to you or the listeners on 96.3. The rents, when they move out, they're moving them like up, some of them up to $900 a month for the next tenant, lucky tenant.
Hey, all you dot-comers, take note. Thank you very much, Merlin.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, rents are rising, and the Homeless Working Group, meanwhile, which meets for every Friday, 3 to 5, and we'll be meeting next Friday from 3 to 5. I think it's meeting from 3 to 5. At the Holiday Inn, Chamber of Commerce, is considering candidates. And we're not having large forums like some of the other groups, but we are talking to them in groups of 5 and 6. The first group, I think we had Bugenthal and Peter Cook and Steve Argue and Martin Bryant. And then the next time we had Arnie Leff and Scott Kennedy and Bonnie Moore and Dick DeBrava. And then last time, on last Friday, we had, as I mentioned before, Mark Premack and Jake Olthoff, a newcomer student, and Ed Porter. I'm going to play you a little bit from the Arnie Leff group of candidates. We haven't really had the time or taken the time to yet winnow through all these discussions. We are looking for some sort of key litmus test issues. The Homeless Working Group will have its own vote on whether to endorse candidates or whether simply to use this as a process of educating people in the community and maybe publishing some of the things that were said. But HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, another group I work with, kind of came out with three areas of concern, kind of three basic areas of question. The first one, three things we wanted to get clear answers, and clear answers of a very particular kind from candidates. One was the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance and the blanket ban sections. Sleeping ban section is section 6.36010A of the municipal code. It's actually just section A, and it says you can't sleep after 11 o'clock at night from 11 to 8:30 outside or in a vehicle, or in any structure that is not a house or hotel, a domicile, which really is the harshest sleeping ban of any city that I've ever heard of. Now, penalties have been reduced because of pressure, but it's still a $54 ticket. So we said, will you move to strike this section immediately getting into power? And also, will you move to strike the next section, which says you shall not cover up with a blanket even if you're not asleep, section 6.36.010B. And we asked this very specifically, and then we said, will you agree to do so that it becomes effective before the Christmas vacation? Which means city council members would have to act fast, because an ordinance takes a month, unless it's an emergency ordinance, which you can do with a 5-2 vote, to get passed. So people would have to actually prepare to introduce it at the first session. And so we asked that, and Scott Bugenthal said he would, although some felt Scott Graham thought he hedged his answer by talking about safe sleeping spaces and getting the community involved and so forth. But he reassured me privately later that he believed that he didn't, A, striking A and B come first. So in order to make sure that people don't backtrack on this, we asked them to make that statement at every public forum when the homeless issue came up, that I favor striking sections A and B and whatever else they want to say. And so far, nobody has done that, including Steve Argue, though they've all said, several of them have said, including Steve Argue, including Bonnie Moore, including Scott Bugenthal, that they would decriminalize sleeping. I have a quick call here. We're going to be going into a tape shortly, but let's see what this caller wants. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robespierre's Robe. This is Linda from Housing Now in Santa Cruz, and yes, this is a very quick sentence.
The infamous Lighthouse Linda?
Infamous, thanks a lot.
Yes.
You called me a slut once, too. You don't have to call me infamous.
Well, this is a pretty
Even
nasty...
Even if I am infamous.
You've turned into a nasty show here, Lynn. What can I say? But speak up, you infamous woman.
Thank you.
Yes. You were actually at this homeless working group, one or two of them, when some of these questions were asked.
Yeah, I really wanted to put stuff in their brains as well as find out what's in there now. And I wish I could have been to the last one, but I was very sick last week. But I'm calling about
It's
your
impossible to fill a sieve. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Now I'm a sieve, too?
Not you, the candidates. You wanted to put stuff in their minds.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What minds?
I don't know. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, sort of.
Right.
I've called about Julie and you talking.
Yes.
And you were, it seemed like strongly or clearly recommending that what they need to ask for from the city is a kind of guarantee that would include no evictions without just cause. That was the phrase you used.
Mm-hmm.
No evictions without just cause.
Right.
Just cause sucks. In the court system, at least, I think they should just demand that everybody there have right of first refusal, absolutely, with all the potential kinds of benefits and support that could come with that if the city would do it,
mm-hmm.
and not allow just cause as a reason to kick them out, because in court that could be because you left your laundry laying around out in the walkway and someone complained, and if you do it twice, you get eviction notice. Now, it doesn't sound like the landlord there deals with things that way, and that's really wonderful, but other people are listening to your show.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to know that landlords can manipulate just cause evictions out of almost anything if they don't like you.
Mm-hmm.
They can make up lies, and if you don't have the connections or money to defend in court and prove otherwise, just because it seems there's a court prejudice that favors landlords and property owners,
mm-hmm.
you get evicted. And once you get evicted, or even if you go to court and you don't get evicted and you win, once there's a record that you stood up to a landlord in the court system,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to find another landlord.
Well, the problem with these tenants is not that they're going to get evicted. The problem is that they're not even going to be allowed to remain in the... Their tenancy is going to be terminated without... You know, evictions. They're going to be told, "Well, we have to thin this down."
Yeah, they can't. I think that's a crime. And
that is my concern about Mercy Charities.
We have to get a big circle of people to surround
and
the building when they try to do it.
My concern about private landlords is that they, for other reasons, you know, might want to remove people. And if we're going to protect people from Mercy Charities, we must also be prepared to try to protect them from whatever a landlord comes in, whether he's, you know, licensed by the city or, you know,
Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what kind of management, but mm-hmm. the chances are if it's low income, it may be not friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly not friendly management. Turnover is a popular thing with prices, like that guy calling about how much they can raise the rent if they get just to get you out. So, if I were in a political situation wanting to support tenants, I would not encourage them to acquiesce to just cause for eviction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's bad enough that landlords can do that at all. The way they do it, some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few landlords. I don't mean to sound too polarized here, but most of them who rent to low-income, moderate-income people are just greed-driven. They don't give a shit what happens to their tenants. I am speaking from experience, but that's more than I meant to say.
That's
just,
okay.
You know, just
I know that you also had some thoughts about another subject while you're on. Title IV is an issue that would allow building inspectors, particular expansion of powers, or be an expansion of person power. It sounds like, based upon what I was shown in the title, that there would be a what is currently in the beach south of Laurel area only, an ability for a building inspector to, in essence, investigate without a complaint, just in his own initiative. That would be expanded to the whole city.
It's not just the beach south of Laurel. There's three neighborhoods that the city has sort of legally or bureaucratically targeted. One's the beach flats. One's here where I live that the city calls Lower Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
They've deemed it a ghetto so they can get money for it. And one is the one you mentioned over there.
I'm sorry?
The one you named, the Laurel thing. What's the phrase the city uses for the Laurel?
Beach Flats?
No.
I'm not sure which. Beach South of Laurel?
South of Laurel.
Yeah, South
the
of Laurel.
South of Laurel mm-hmm. neighborhood. It's just
but in any case,
put money in it.
On Tuesday, at the very last item on the agenda is a second reading of a complete revamping of the code. And indeed, I heard that Fred Geiger, who brought this issue to the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committee with a letter requesting that the City Council reconsider this and give the new council a chance to look at it, and then it be sent back to the Planning Commission for really extensive corrections, because the Planning Commission's original concerns were not contained in the staff report. Again, it seems the staff is taking its own way on these issues. That kind of became a subject of some discussion at the SCAN Housing, two SCAN Housing and Homelessness Committees meetings. And I know that you wrote some extensive...
Did you get my information, the memo?
You wrote me something extensively on the email, which I had printed up, but I'm having trouble finding here.
Well, that's okay.
Perhaps you can kind of summarize what your concerns are about and what you think should be done. I mean...
Well, you probably want to... plug Fred's concerns here on the air if you have
already.
Why don't you do that for me,
Lynn?
Because I'm more in touch with my own, and I want to mention it.
Fred should be trying to call in. In fact, after I talk to you, I'm going to try to call him, and we only have about 20 minutes left.
Okay.
So.
No, I'm looking at this new Title IV consolidation as a whole big chunk rather than the specific concerns, which are also very important that Fred brought up. And this is what I saw. The gist is the inspectors, the planning department staff that has to manage enforcement of code violations and unsafe things, health and safety, they need more money coming in and they need more staff. And it sounds to me like the staff is just basically asking the city to suddenly plant a whole new direction in their policy making that gives the city the authority to actually dump a place, you know, more a few steps closer to using eminent domain and things like that. But they want to get money, and they're saying, you know, it's such a drag and so it takes too much time. The only other recourse people have is going to court about the issues where there's money or displaced tenancy and stuff. And it's true. In my experience with the courts, that's, I think, a valid reason to want to do it bureaucratically instead of in court to save time, impact tenants less. Have a little more immediate...
You're a little unclear about what you're saying here, Linda, at least
sorry.
To me.
Okay.
What you're saying is that they want a new direction from the city council so they can make more money? Is that the deal?
The staff wants the city council to okay. They're expanding that department where code enforcement happens.
What I noticed...
You know,
right.
So
what
they can close down places or get them fixed much more quickly.
Right.
And have more clout with the really bad, egregious landlords.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that comes and get money.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to get money coming into the city coffers instead of going into the court, and for a lot of expedient reasoning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're recommending that the city let them set up this thing of code enforcement for housing and let them get all these penalty monies and put them in a general fund. They want to throw them in the city's general budget coffers.
Explain what that means to the average person.
Just to take this money and give it to the city to do with what they want. And I have come to feel if they're going to do that, if they get away with this kind of sudden expansion, you know, sounds like Mayor Willie came through or something to me, it should go into a fucking dedicated housing fund.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't go into the general fund.
Well, there a lot of us feel there shouldn't be this expansion in the first place, but you're saying that if there is, it should go into a housing fund. Any other points you want to make?
What were Fred's points?
Well, Fred pointed
me
out, and I wish I had his literature before me. I usually do.
Maybe I do.
He pointed out that ADUs, accessory dwelling units, would not be grandfathered in, so that these are the units where people are living in garages and so forth. They were supposed to be amnestied or grandfathered so that even though they're less than 5 feet from the property line, which is technically illegal, or even though there is no covered parking for the house outside, which is technically illegal, it would still be okay for a tenant who's a part of an ADU to complain about a housing problem without fearing that the city would simply close down the unit by requiring the landlord to spend all kinds of money making changes that she or he would just not be willing to make. And this affects 1,000 to 2,000 people. So in essence, Fred was saying, the first thing you've got to make sure are that these accessory dwelling units are grandfathered in before you start, and that's not a part of this proposal at the moment.
Yeah,
that was
well,
one thing.
The only spin I can add to that might be helpful for listeners is the city did some liberalizing and updating of what could be grandfathered, but because it was controversial to deal with that parking offset issue, everybody got upset in town and, you know, basically came down and confronted their city council. They didn't deal with that part. I guess this was 4 years ago or something.
And the other thing was the civil liberties concerns, which I brought up to some extent, asking the standard. And I talked to Attorney Kate Wells about it. She agreed with me. There's a standard in there that talks about reasonable cause for a building inspector to enter the property.
Uh-huh.
In law, there's such a thing as reasonable suspicion of a crime and probable cause of a crime. Those are two different standards, but there's no reasonable cause standard. Mike Rodkin sort of interrupted me with a sneer, saying it was a legal term of art.
Right.
I guess he means, you know, painting instead of law, because
sort of like just cause eviction.
At least the first attorney I talked to has never heard of it, and she's been in the courts probably more frequently than Mike Rodkin.
I've never heard of it pertaining to landlord tenants.
But the other things that Fred Geiger was talking about was there's a very, very expansive statement about the powers of the building inspectors being at the kind of the discretion of the planning department, and also that there's an expression. Another expression about that was that they're going to be appointing their own administrative judges instead of there being. Well, I don't think we have time to talk about it. I'm just kind of running through what they are.
I don't think that if the landlord's appeal place is in the same department as the inspector's decree or demands, it's a real appeal process. That's all I need to
say. I think that's it's clear. You're kind of it's like curbside justice. Now I'm going to try to give Fred a quick call so he can put in a word or two because he has been having some comments with locals. Linda, thank you, and I hope we can give you more time next time.
Oh, that's fine. That's a good show today.
Thanks, Linda. And we are still with you here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we're giving a call to activist Fred Geiger, who, as I said, is going to be hopefully presenting a letter to which has been authorized by the Housing and Homelessness Subcommittee, though for some reason on the net, Scan refers to it as the Housing Committee, but has forgotten the word homelessness. Maybe they're just it's an election eve omission. I mean, when the election's over, they'll get back and use some of those forbidden phrases. But it looks like Fred is not available at the moment. I'm getting his recording as I call. So, again, I would urge you, if you want to see, 1,000 to 2,000 people who are currently in accessory dwelling units be able to be protected and also be able to complain about their landlords without losing their housing, give a call to 420-5017 and leave a message for the City Council. I do not want to have you talk about Title 4 of the City Code, that's what this is, Title 4, as the last item of the agenda at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I think it's a very crowded agenda. You need to put this off. It needs to go back to the Planning Commission for more discussion. You're not paying much attention to what the Planning Commission has asked you to talk about, and the City Council is going to be changing anyway. Let's wait on this. Just like, and say this as a second item, I would encourage you, let's not rush into a purchase of the Dolphin or the Lee property without clear guarantees, because once you purchase it, you're going to have somebody to run it. And, of course, you have your old pals, Mercy Charities, waiting there in the wings. And we've already seen that they have been unwilling to assert guarantees for the tenants, just as the City Council, for some reason, has been unwilling to explicitly vote for those guarantees. If you won't vote for the guarantees, you should hold on the project. That's what SCAN has asked for. That is what SCAN is again asking for. And I believe Maureen Smith, of the chair of the Housing and Homelessness Subcommittee, will be down at the City Council at 11:30 in the morning at the closed session to make that point, possibly in the evening at 7 o'clock as well. And again, the phone number to call for both these things is 420-5017. And lest people think we aren't talking enough about the sleeping ban, which we have not forgotten, and it is still the subject of police action, less so, I would say, than a year ago because of all the pressure that we and others have put on the police and on the community. Mark Premack and others notwithstanding who say that we've created an issue of confrontation. If only we kept our trap shut, there wouldn't be a camping ordinance. A really preposterous statement by Premack he made at the homeless working group last Friday, and we're going to be kind of reviewing his stuff maybe next Thursday or next Sunday on this show. The show's on every Sunday from 11 to 1:30, and it's on every Thursday on 96.3, which is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, from 6 to 8 in the evenings. And the name of the show, for those of you who've forgotten or just tuned in, is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Bathrop's Pierre, and my broadsides are certainly here, and you could see them if you were here, and you could also hear them, and you are hearing them. These are my broadsides. And so we can't really carry Title IV much further at the moment. You're invited to come down to the Homeless Working Group at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Tastings Restaurant. You're invited to go off to the Bonnie Moore kickoff. It's even as we speak, at the Duck Pond, San Lorenzo Park. Stay around for Steve's kickoff at 3 o'clock, or wander over to Emily Riley's from 2 to 5. It's not Emily, it's Ed Porter's from 2 to 5 at 660 Escalona. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning, Homeless Working Group will be having a quick caucus to plan what it's going to do at City Council tomorrow, because Title IV creates homelessness, we're afraid, with the way it's been posed. We've talked about that a little bit before with our last caller. And at 8:30, Jerry Henry will be going to facing the judge, Commissioner Kelsey, on the issue of will he get a retrial. That's in court in Department 2. Then on
There's something on Monday afternoon. I'm trying to remember just what it is. Monday afternoon. Darned if I remember. But on Tuesday morning, there is first of all the Board of Supervisors at 9 o'clock. Again, we've been pressing the Board of Supervisors to open up safe sleeping spaces for people. And we still don't get any word on what's wrong with Emmeline Street. It's vacant every night. People are cold. People are getting wet out there. People are getting harassed and have to worry about police banging on their cars with heavy flashlights, possibly damaging their vehicles, possibly just driving them onward, possibly just disrupting their sleep so they can't go to work the next morning with the same kind of clarity of mind and refreshment of spirit that they would have otherwise. Board of Supes, oral communication, 9 o'clock, Tuesday morning. 11:30, City Council, Tuesday morning. The closed session, the open interval right before the closed session, where I believe you heard Julie Costanza Gomez of the Dolphin, I should say of the Lee Apartments, is going to be speaking to the City Council and possibly some of the tenants. Ah, yes, I remember what happens on Monday night. 6:30, Residentes Unidos meets, and that's at 124 Lee Brandt Street. That's tomorrow night, 6:30, half a block from the beach boardwalk at the Lee Apartments in the garage there. Come on down, join us, help us. Send a message to City Council that tells them affordable housing, yes. Guarantees, yes. Evictions, no. That's what we want to talk about. City Council will be having a packed session at 3 o'clock, the consent agenda, 5 o'clock, redevelopment agency, 7 o'clock, the oral communications session. We're inviting people to come to oral communications. Medical marijuana was not put on the agenda for some reason, and we talked to Kate Wells a little bit about that. In fact, we're going to try to quickly hear from her now. She may be home. It's always nice to get on people on Sunday when they're trying to watch some foolish sporting event. We want that to happen. Kate has been attorney for the Cannabis Club for some time. Of course, always the problem of getting the phone to work. That's always a useful precondition to any of this, or necessary precondition, I should say. In case you want to call in, and you can get in between all these calls, the phone number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. And again, medical marijuana has been having some problems with particularly the pharmaceuticals club. And it looks like, unfortunately, Kate is not home at the moment, so we'll hope that we can reach her at another show and get an update. But they are going to be lining up at the oral communications along with Dolphin people, along with Sleeping Band people. It's going to be quite a crowded session, so bring your pillow, bring your blanket, I don't know, bring an alarm clock. It's hard to say because City Council is so boring in spite of all these people that it often makes you want to go to sleep. As usual, we've reached the end of the 2 hours, 2.5 hours so quickly. I found lots of interesting stories in the paper today and the last few days that I haven't been able to read. One is two Prince George County officers indicted in dog attack. I'm tempted just to read this story because we have a canine unit here that's never had any clear controls put on it that I've been aware of or the public has been aware of. Another story is two German skinheads confessed to beating death of homeless men. Another is police investigating attacks on homeless in Colorado Springs, or I should say not investigating attacks, since I think it was, seven people were murdered last year, seven homeless people, some of them decapitations, and only one of those has been, quote, solved or prosecutions brought out. Interesting story on China's uprooted peasants finding life in the city awash in difficulty. I'm wondering what's going to happen to the uprooted Hispanic people that the city is considering dumping. And that, I think, is an interesting analogy, and it sort of is not far-fetched at all, and it's something we're trying to make sure it doesn't happen. Lots of interesting stuff around the police department of Los Angeles. Some of this stuff we read you last show, and some we didn't get to. Talked about L.A. police killing an unarmed motorist, another L.A. police officer charged in the shooting of an unarmed driver, 9/11 call ending in a fatal shooting, police shooting in Prince George County. I read you about that last time as well. So there's quite a bit of stuff happening. And also the whole business of the Rampart scandal in Los Angeles. has been a consent decree that has been agreed to in part by the city council down there, but they're still hedging their bets, and the best we can say is that all the media focus is the potential for media focus has put pressure on the police to temporarily keep a low profile. I'm going to read a little bit about this Prince George County dog business, because I think it's got a couple of lessons for us. Two Prince George County officers indicted in dog attack by Ruben Castaneda, Washington Post, September 21st. A federal grand jury in Greenbelt yesterday indicted two Prince George County police officers on charges that they had a police dog bite an unresisting homeless man. A former Tacoma Park detective, now an FBI agent, was charged with covering up the assault by charging the man with burglary. The indictment alleges that Captain Anthony DeLazier and a Tacoma Park officer Captain Anthony DeLazier asked a Tacoma Park officer if a county police dog could take a officers had found on the roof of a Tacoma Park printing company during a stakeout for burglars. Officer Stephanie Moore then released her county police dog, which bit Ricardo De Mendez, now 27, according to the indictment. Soon afterward, another officer, who was not identified in the indictment, stuck the second man, who had been found on the roof, Jorge Herrera Cruz, now 38, There was no knifing involved here, but struck him. The indictment charges that Brian Rich, then a Tacoma Park police detective and now an FBI agent, so two FBI agents are involved in these prosecutions as defendants in New Jersey, helped cover up the assaults by charging the two men with burglary, though there was no evidence against them. Attorneys for Moore and DeLozier said their clients are innocent, that is, these are the attorneys for the FBI people. The name of Rich's attorney could not be learned. Maryland U.S. Attorney Lynn A. Battaglia said during a news conference yesterday that details about the incident, which occurred 5 years ago today, did not come to light until recently. "It's distressing to all of us that we didn't know about this earlier," Battaglia said. The prosecutor said several officers besides Moore, DeLozier, and Rich were at the scene. "There is the proverbial blue wall of silence that makes it difficult to investigate these cases," said Michael Clemens, assistant FBI agent in charge of the Baltimore field office, which investigated the case. Bill Lan Lee, head of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division, said, "No one is above the law, and no one is so humble that he or she falls outside the protection of the laws." Thanks, Bill. It only took you 5 years to find that one out, huh? The indictment was returned 1 day before the statute of limitations would have expired. Officials would not say how they learned of the incident. Since April 1999, the Justice Department has been conducting a broad civil rights investigation into whether the county police canine unit engages in a pattern of brutality. The FBI and Justice Department are continuing to investigate the canine unit and are considering whether to expand their probes to the department as a whole, justice officials said. According to court records and interviews, officers in the Prince George Police Canine Unit sometimes let their dogs loose to attack whomever they encounter, and at other times order them to bite suspects who have been handcuffed or otherwise subdued. During the past decade, no canine unit officer has been disciplined by the police department for excessive force, according to court records. Moore and DeLozier are each charged with conspiracy and deprivation of rights under color of law. Conviction on the conspiracy charge carries up to 5 years in prison, while conviction on the civil rights charge carries up to 10 years. Both charges carry fines as much as $250,000. Rich is charged with aiding and abetting and being an accessory after the fact. Those crimes carry prison terms and fines of about half what Moore and DeLozier face if they are convicted, officials said. The criminal charges against the three officers come 2 weeks after another Prince George officer, Brian C. Catlett, was indicted on voluntary manslaughter and reckless endangerment charges in the November 1999 fatal shooting of an armed man. And I read about that last week, or actually last Thursday, I think it was, in LAPD officer charged in shooting of unarmed driver. This was the one where the stop sign that the officer supposedly stopped the guy for, there was no stop sign. But it took them how many years to discover it, and they only did because one of the officers involved the jury, even though there was no stop sign and no reasonable cause for a stop, still well, the judge still allowed for a plea bargain conviction here. Amazing. Again, I commented on this last week, how the power of the police is under these circumstances. Continuing, however, with this canine stuff. In addition, the FBI, Fairfax County Police, and Prince George's Police are investigating the fatal shooting on September 1st of Prince C. Jones, 25, by undercover Prince George narcotics detective Carlton B. Jones, no relation about this, too, who had followed the unarmed man more than 15 miles from Chillum to the Seven Corners area of Fairfax County. In all, county police have shot 12 people in the last 14 months, killing five of them. Two other men, both unarmed, died in physical encounters with the county police during the past 12 months. Prince George's Police Chief John S. Farrell said after the indictment, the abuse of police authority will not be tolerated. He said Moore and Delosier, who has been promoted to sergeant, have been suspended with pay. Both will receive a departmental review hearing today. Farrell said his department will continue to operate, cooperate fully with this investigation. Clements said Rich, an FBI agent for 3 years, placed on administrative leave with pay. Now, the story goes on and it has some other interesting aspects. The main aspect I wanted to bring out, and my time is up in the next minute, is that their police chief is under suspicion because he's been, in essence, covering this up. And there is a lot of concern that there's a corrupt police chief. We have similar concerns about our local police chief, Steve Belcher, but there's not a word being said about this anywhere in terms of any of the candidates' statements, the city council candidates, so that we could actually get some accountability for this guy, and maybe possibly a replacement, dare I suggest it. So I'm going to be reading more about this hopefully next time. If anybody has any questions, you can always give me a call between air times at 423-4833. That's the Huff line. And I will be returning to the air on Thursday, and I'll be, of course, showing up at some of these council meetings, so we got anybody who's interested can talk about these issues there. That is almost it here for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm checking out with my successors here. I have to make sure I can get all my tapes out of the studio. I want to thank you for being with us today. Please come on down to the Residentes Unidos meeting tomorrow at 6:30 at the trailer. And City Council needs your input one way or another, by phone, email, or in person. And thank you for being with us for another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
Guess the secret of